One more question. Obviously, big changes before the event even started. Firuja out, Hans out.
Oh my gosh.
Take it wherever you want with them.
First of all,
all right, here we go, guys. This is absolutely impromptu. We did not plan for this one. We just found Danny in the shuttle. So,
I found you.
You found us, yes. Mini podcast. Obviously, we discussed that we're going to do a bigger one, maybe later in the year. But
this guy's schedule pending.
This guy just won.
He did just win.
Corey, feeling funny. I actually don't very good. Why? I'm sick.
Oh, you're sick?
Yeah, but I feel good. But so, sorry. I think we're getting sick also. You're not getting sick?
It's funny because I had a little bit of a tickle in my throat. This is where I'm gonna go jack a bunch of vitamin C, just or drink a bunch of water and see what happens.
Maybe I can get on that bandwagon.
Yeah, you want some vitamin C?
Some good
stuff.
Cool.
Well, there's differences in vitamin C's.
What are you doing?
As a dad, I can tell you that. There's methylated and non-methylated vitamin C, and the way it like dissolves and sort of your body kind of integrates it depends. And the powder vitamin C dissolves in the water a little bit better. So,
did you know that? No, I didn't. This is very, very good information.
Change your life. You got to come visit again. Talia will tell you all about
vitamin C.
Better vitamin C. She knows. You know, that's my 8-year-old. Love you, baby.
This is what they learn in school, vitamin C.
Right. No, that's what they learn at home because Shauna is. I don't know. Shauna just has her own. I would say that my wife, you know, dabbles with witchcraft. You know, she's right on the fringe of, you know, holistic natural medicine versus, you know, although we all just had to do a round of antibiotics and vaccinations. So she's, you know, I think she's very balanced in her views, but she's really all about eating well, lots of vitamins for the kids. So I've learned all about methylated and non-methylated vitamin C, more than I even want to know. I know more about this than I ever wanted to know.
Now you're trying to share your
wisdom. My wisdom, I guess.
You thought this would be a chess podcast.
I know. Sorry. Back to Fabi's win. So I watched your game pretty closely. Okay, so knight f6 was a big... He retreated the knight from d5 to f6 to try to head to e4, but things started to fall apart. The computer said the best move there for you was queen e2. Which is a total computer move to hit the a6. Well, bishop f3 is like the natural human move, but queen e2 was also the odd move that like no human plays. That's how we would catch a cheater right there. No, I'm not kidding. Like when we have a lot of
discussion.
Well, no, we're not going to talk about it, but I mean, that's the... We can talk about it if you want, but I'm saying that's a really good anecdotal moment of where our manual review is super effective with the algorithm. That you've seen version one of our algorithm many years ago. When did we first show you some of our sauce? It's like 2015 almost. Maybe
a bit later. No.
Okay.
It was maybe not 10 years ago, but
we've done a lot of things.
Could have been like 7 years ago.
Yeah. I think we've improved a lot since then. We should talk about, you know, getting under the hood, but that is a really good example where there's like a very natural human move that is also very good to the engine, and that the best move is only 0.4 better or something, but it's such a computer move, right? Where manual review goes, no. Like, something's wrong here. So, anyway, good. But you didn't see queen e2. You're not a cheater.
I mean, the idea was in my mind, but I just liked bishop f3 so much, I didn't bother to really look for alternatives. Like, on the previous move, I was looking at ways to attack the a6 pawn, like bishop e2.
Well, by the way, you didn't play bishop f3 right away. You played knight c4 first.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Knight c4, bishop e7, no. Oh. The cars.
And then bishop f3.
Yeah. Knight c4. Queen e2 instead of knight c4. It could come to mind, but the thing is it's very responsible to, and you spend a lot of time. Like you have to spend maybe 5+ minutes evaluating queen e2. And if it turns out to be not very.
No, you played the human move. You brought your knight is on the edge of the board and you brought it to c4. Yeah, makes sense. So then the position starts to fall apart for him when he sacrifices the exchange. I mean, obviously at that point, it's
over.
Kind of pure desperation already, right?
Yeah, he didn't see anything else to do, and he didn't want to spend all his time. I would probably spend all my time looking for an alternative, because I just assume like the exchange down is probably untenable. But you could also just lose without any.
That's all.
Was it even worse?
Is that all you had? Right?
That's the title. No, his style is to just go for it and hope that something appears.
So I actually stopped watching after you took the exchange. What was your next move?
I played knight to e5 because he didn't give a check on g4.
Oh, he didn't? Oh, I was analyzing with Sagar. I was on the Chess Race India. We said you have to play bishop d4 check first, otherwise knight e5.
But then after king h1, rook d8, there's knight d2. And then knight goes to f3.
Now you are playing the best entry moves. I already know this is the best line because I analyzed.
Well, I thought rook d8 at least, like knight e5 is a bit of a decision because the structural change is not great, but I didn't see any way for him to exploit. So knight e5, take. He played king h8, which I thought was a main move after knight e5. And then I took on c5.
Okay, but at this point, now
he tried some stuff, but it didn't quite work.
With only one bishop. The only chance he had was if he could have somehow maintained the two bishops.
Yeah, the tactic worked to work. Yeah. Perfectly per.
Danny, outside of his brilliant victory, come from behind after the planes, he did pretty badly in that one.
Yeah.
But now he's doing quite well. Outside of that, what's your, let's say, assessment of the bet so far? You've been here since the beginning.
Yeah. My assessment of the event.
You're enjoying it as a spectator. You're enjoying it as a fan.
Yeah, I'm. You know, I have so much to say about
as a business. You know, I don't know. I don't know your angle, right?
as a fan, it's exciting to see. At one point, I was a decent chess player. I have to say that in this room, not a great chess player, but as a someone who played chess at a decently high level and then understands a little bit of the pain of opening prep, and as a commentator, I really understand what it is to appreciate that the best players in the world are capable of misstepping very early on, right? And it captivates. They're capable of doing brilliant things early on, but also misstepping, right? You get unique things like Magnus getting himself in a bunch of trouble with this queen in front of the center pawn's idea today, although ultimately, you know, I don't think he's going to lose now at the time of this recording. And you see, you know, obviously, like, you struggled in this dynamic with Black against Vincent Keimer. And it's a good example of, when would Fabiano ever be in a position where all he had to do is hold his black against anyone in the world and not get the job done? Like, you know, you're so well prepared. We would say Fabi's going to hold this one and try to push it to tie breaks. The fact that freestyle creates a dynamic where maybe the best prepared player in his generation is not able to get a comfortable position against Vincent Keimer shows a little bit of, like, why we do this as far as the games go.
It's even worse than that, because in classical chess, Keimer wouldn't take any risks. Like, his aim would be over in five moves. That's it. You played Berlin, you repeat, and that's it.
I'm not sure about that, but
it would be over in five moves, for sure.
You think that the first... Oh, wait, you're magging a draw?
No, we're talking about the...
Oh, Vincent Keimer. Oh, I thought you meant the last Weisenhaus event. Oh,
no.
Sure. No, I was talking about just this last one.
Oh, yeah.
So I agree with Christian that the point is it's, you know, that part of it is interesting as a fan, as a commentator, even though I'm only making guest appearances here. I appreciate the dynamic of what's happening on the board being challenging for these guys who are the best in our world, right? Then I think as far as the dynamics of the event itself goes, I mean, there's all kinds of conversation about this whole thing right now. You know, what is the future of freestyle? The drama that developed with them and FIDE over the couple of months, now it all seems to have been sort of put back in the box. And so I think people have skepticism and criticism, rightfully so at times, as to whether this is just a Magnus Carlsen play thing, because he got bored with the world championship and found some random German millionaire who was crazy enough to do this, and let's see what happens. I'm just being rated R. Like, that's the skeptical approach, is what actually really is the future of this. I think Magnus has many great points, and there's a reason he's excited about this and turned his back on the traditional world championship cycle. I'm not invalidating his view, but I'm saying that's a criticism. So I think the test of time of whether it's about more than just something that your generation, you and Magnus and Hikaru and others really like, how much do the younger players enjoy this event compared to something that, you know, I guess... Now, again, it's interesting because you're probably unique in that I would argue if we were asking who the best classical chess player in the world is right now, he's sitting between us. And I think so. I think Magnus, I mean, there's Magnus doesn't play classical chess, and he wouldn't be motivated to play classical chess, which means I don't think he would be the best that format.
We'd say we don't have much info on Magnus at the moment.
Yeah. So you're saying Magnus would still be the best?
No, let's say we don't have enough info on Magnus.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, we just don't know this. I mean, like, if you're telling me, okay, Magnus versus Gukeshin match, I'm definitely putting my money on Magnus, right? And you would too, I assume. But we still don't have enough info, and classical chess is also tournament chess. But if we look at my, like, quality of play in the last, say, 5 months, I think I'm definitely below.
Yeah, but before that, you were having one of the best years of your career.
Sure.
To be honest.
I've had a few, classical-wise, I've had a top few months. But okay, we should look at the recent data, I guess. I wouldn't say that up. I would think it would be a little bit biased if I were to say that at the moment.
Well,
but I do appreciate
it. And even when I compliment you, I'm not just... Look, there are a lot of... I mean, Hikaru's had a really good compliment. He's currently number two in the world, right? But I don't... What?
It's sort of difficult to gauge who's the best player right
and,
now.
And so what...
Is it Hikaru? He doesn't play...
That's what I was going to get to.
Yeah, she's the world champion, but he's having... He's struggling in chess 960. Not necessarily struggling in classical chess, actually. He's doing quite well in...
Yeah. So
he did well in Tata Steel. I don't get what he played after that, but he seems to be doing well.
He played Eisenhaus.
I don't think he did. Yeah, no, but that was freestyle also.
Yeah, exactly. I'm talking about the tournament.
He's
like,
he's struggling.
Yeah, his last pure classical event was Mackenzie.
So the broader point I was going to make after saying this, the skeptical view that fans have about freestyle was exactly that. The problem is that regardless of your views on freestyle versus classical, that there have to be a versus, we are undeniably in a situation where the FIDE candidate cycle is currently failing to deliver the best player in the world as the world champion for whatever reason, because of how the system works, maybe because, you know, the best player in the world doesn't want to play that format.
But is that a problem?
Well, I don't know that it's a problem.
Is that
exactly? Because like, look, in other sports,
I don't think that it's having a failure. I mean, the thing is, like, if you want to say who's the best player in the world, and most people say Magnus. And if you want to say who has the best classical record, considering that Magnus doesn't play that much, who has the best classical record of the last year, then I think Gukesh is a fair bet, considering he won candidates at Tata, or tied for first in Tata and lost to Prague. And
you think Gukesh is the best classical chess player in the world?
He could be. I would say in like...
In a match? He could be in a match.
No, not in a match, but...
He's not the best player in the world.
No. No.
He's not even a top five.
But you don't know about that in any sport. Like, for example, a boxing champion, the intrigue is going to be that some contender is maybe better than him.
Right.
Whenever
and you have different weight classes, right? You have different... Also, a really good comparison is actually running. Usain Bolt would lose a marathon.
Sure.
Their builds differently. It's completely different sport, but it's still it's the physical act of running. Maybe it
completely.
Maybe it's the most comparable, though.
But
you're right.
I think that chess, like, if you can... Pair blitz to rapid, it's still very similar, and you see more or less the same people at the top, not necessarily the same at the very top, but more or less the same at the top. But you can't compare long distance running to sprinting. It's just totally different. Their bodies are totally different. That's just a different sport.
I agree with you. I think just because the time control gets faster in chess doesn't mean it's still not inherently chess. I guess to prove the point, the best players in the world tend to be mostly the best at all the different disciplines.
Totally,
yes. Rapid, classical, and now very agile.
For sure. You'll see it.
But overall, we're agreeing. I guess what I was saying is there's the skepticism of freestyle. Generally, there's a lot of conversation about it because of how quickly it sort of took the world by storm, if you will, and because we've been in this unique world where he was undeniably the best player in the world at the time, turned his back on the world championship title. Literally, you know, acquiesced, he rescinded, right? And so that was a unique dynamic that we were all in starting in 2022. So, but I actually agree with you, Christian, that overall, while this seems like a big problem, I don't know that it's really that big of a problem. And
I think it's raw metal.
You know, heavyweight boxing versus like welterweight and lightweight, you have these interesting dynamics where sometimes you get that weight class battle where a real star in this one wants to take on a real star in this one. And that's
sometimes,
fascinating content.
Sometimes
yep.
Sticks in diet.
Yep.
And actually, staying on Gukesh, we had this discussion before, but what do you think about this one? Fabi said that if he continues losing, maybe he should consider not accepting the invitation to the next freestyle event.
So just because you take a hit every time you lose any game.
Agnes said the same thing. We were in a car the other day, and maybe I'm revealing private conversation, but I don't think it's crazy to say that. It's like, how many horrible performances does he have before he doesn't accept the invite? Right? Is it bad for his brand? I don't know. But
also his brand, sure.
Definitely.
Confidence, brand, whatever.
Well, it's bad for your brand, for sure. It's bad for your confidence, which is maybe bigger issue than well.
Yep. But the events are so nice, and Jan-Henrik does treat the players well, that it's hard, and there's prize money.
It's hard to say no to an event where you can make 200 grand. On the other hand, if you're the world champion, and he definitely will be making millions every year, and probably doesn't have to worry for money, then he... maybe could consider other things which are more long-term. including preparing for what's most important for him, which is the world championship, and not worrying too much about things. And also, you know, like, let's say I play Zero Question a few matches here, I gain a lot of confidence against it. That does help me, I think,
in classical,
in every format.
Yeah, every form.
And he loses confidence. It makes you look
less invincible. What do you think? Do you think he should continue doing that? He should continue playing, or should he
stop accepting invitations? Like, he's doing pretty poorly in this one. Didn't qualify Pop 8. Now he might be losing Guest.
He did lose.
I lose Guest. I think... here's what I think. I think Yukesh's state of mind is pretty wise for his age, for his youth. And I don't think Yukesh would argue that while he feels super fortunate and by no means didn't earn his way to the highest title in chess, he doesn't consider himself the best player in the world, and he probably doesn't consider himself in the top five here. And I think he would actually accept that in a way that is healthy from the point of view that he sees himself as a very young player who has a very bright career ahead, and why would he say no to events that challenge him to be the best version of himself? So if I was his coach, and if I was crawling inside his head, I would say, it's an interesting talking point for the fans. There's obviously the unique environment that I won't repeat myself on that we all live in because of these weird dynamics, whatever. But I don't think Yukesh gets that bothered by poor performances, even if it affects his fan base. And I think he knows he has a lot to learn. That's the best way to say it. I mean, he's 18. He has a lot to learn.
That was my take as well. Yeah, I said he's only 18. He needs to compete. He needs to compete in pretty much every format. He needs to challenge himself. And he should continue playing and trying to get better at this. We're almost there. So one more question. Obviously, big changes before the event even started. Firuja out, Hans out.
Oh my gosh.
Take it wherever you want with them.
First of all,
how love is an effort.
How wild is that? What, I mean, seriously, like, this is absolutely crazy. I know everyone looks at me like, and I've been asked this by so many of you, like, I have some sort of inside information and track. I really don't here. I think that there's every time you play out the chess board of justifying Hans's moves, other than, like, you know, if there's a real tragedy going on, you hope the best for him and his family and everything. Like, obviously, we want safety and health wherever possible. So assuming that's okay, it doesn't make any sense for him to do what he did, especially as a guy who's half of Hans's public brand has become conspiratorially accusing organizers and events of blackballing him. And just now you have an invite and an opportunity to compete for hundreds of thousands of dollars against Magnus Carlsen. We know he's not afraid of, like, being in that environment with anti-cheat detection or anything. Like, we already held Hans, by the way, in Paris at the Speed Chess Championship. Like, I think that there's no world to justify his actions and for him to not realize that the consequences are massively serious. Because if you want to look in the mirror, if you're Hans and you want to look in the mirror while you claim conspiratorial stuff, you have a track record and things I won't say in confidence of not leaving the organizers with the best of taste in their mouth because of your actions. That is your responsibility. And now you burned your bridges with an organizer 24 hours out of an event that he, frankly, bent over backward to think of a way to get Hans Niemann in by basically adding the Grinky thing to the event in order for Hans to get an invite because Hans is a fascinating character. So there's, like, no world. And you add that to the fact that he was talking trash with Karamnik on Twitter, like, 4 days before the event started, like, taking selfies of, like, their training.
He wanted to play.
Yeah.
Whatever the reason is, he just couldn't play. So I don't know what the reason is, but I just think
it might be something personal, right?
So that's why I go back to you. So with that rant there, because, you know, you have to call that out because that's what people are wondering. With that rant, I have to come back to fully assuming something must be really going on that is super tough. And so wish him the best and his family, because I think other than something truly tragic, there's absolutely no world to explain this. And unfortunately, because of how he communicated it, like, I think he still will have repair to do with Jan Henrik and the organizers, because it just didn't. Because even if it is a real tragedy, you'd think you would have made a little bit more of an effort to, you know, to kind of get that across. Because obviously he left a bad taste in Jan Henrik's mouth based on what he said, you know, about how it went down. So what do you think?
I mean, I really do think that he wanted to play very much. I had no idea what the reason could be. And I'm not going to speculate. But whatever the reason is, he probably just couldn't play. Well, there was just something too important that he had to do that he could punish.
Yeah, but you see my point about you communicate it.
Of course, I would.
And that is the only that information I have from John Henrik is like he literally was like, I'm texting with the guy. Like, we have a good relationship. Like, it's disrespectful to him to be like, what happened to like a back and forth? Anything he, you know, versus like
an email that best to get a reason.
What?
It's best to give a reason, for sure.
That's my point. If you really want to save face with an organizer and expect to be invited again, it's best to give a reason or to handle it potentially. But he's also very young. I mean, Hans is young. Maybe he looks back in hindsight and goes, okay, yeah, it was a real tragedy. And clearly, you're right. I should have communicated better, but I didn't. I wasn't thinking clearly because maybe he's super sad, right? So I think we could give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't
know the contractual GDS, contractual problems with the organizers a lot.
I don't want to speak to that. Yeah, go ahead.
I know the reason, but I'm not going to say it.
Exactly. And that's I was just going to say the same thing. I feel like I have too much inside information on this one to pretend to speculate with intellectual honesty. And I'm not, everything I say is honest. And so I'm not going to pretend to speculate here when I actually do know the answers. And I know that it wasn't. A great back and forth contractually. And so I'd rather just not share on that. I mean, everyone wants to see Perugia and you hope that he can work out terms in the future, but I don't want to speculate because I know the answer and but I do wish Perugia was here.
We'll wait for Maureen to come out. Danny, see you in summer. Hopefully we'll.
So we can preview that we're going to have a proper C-Square podcast where you guys get to grill me and put Bobby gets all of his cheating dreams out. Get to grill me and all the things that we want to talk about. It's going to happen.
The official preview of the C-Score podcast episode with Danny Wrench.
See you guys. Cheers.